just started that in 2014 just for Mangapai. Like, I didn't think it would go anywhere else. It was like just for my community.
Well, good day and welcome back to another episode of the Humans of Agriculture podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Lalive, and as always, thanks for joining me on Wadawurrung country. And I'd like to extend my respects to the traditional owners on the lands wherever you're taking our podcast this week. This week, I'm sitting down with Ginny Stevens. She's the founder of Active Farmers, and we're going to jump into that whole story. But Ginny's just finished her first week of sending her twins off, and they started school. So she's someone who's no stranger to being busy, if we want to use that word. Well, having a schedule jam-packed. It doesn't sound like it's going to get any quieter anytime soon. If we jump in, Ginny, I think for me, I'm really looking forward to meeting you at the Xander Summit in March, but I've first followed the Active Farmers story. I think it must have popped up on social media and there was a story of what you guys were doing. I think it might have been out of Tasmania. And so I'm really interested to find out more about your story because I know in kind of a similar way, you went through that piece of you were working for someone and had this passion project bubbling away on the side and then you ended up pursuing it full time. But at the moment, I know you've just had a huge week. Your twins started school, so how was that?
Yeah, they started school, and I've been, to be honest, a bit of an emotional wreck. I think I didn't expect to kind of feel that way because they're just so excited and they're so ready to go, and it's what they need. And I suppose just find myself questioning, you know, have I done enough, or have I spent enough time with them, or have I prepared them well enough for school? Have I worked too much and not spent enough time with them? And, you know, where's all the time gone? All these things like running through my mind. But seeing them, picking them up after their first couple of days, they're just so happy and they really want to go back. So that's kind of made it a little bit easier. But, I sort of find myself feeling a bit lost when they're not here. Certainly we'll get used to that.
I bet. And have they come back with stories of the different friends and different activities and their teacher and everything else?
Yeah, so they've got different teachers and, yeah, one of them loves Lego, so he's thrilled because there's Lego in his classroom, and the other one likes the playground. They're so different. So, yeah, they're all smiles, so that's that makes it definitely a lot easier.
Yeah. It's cool as well that they're in separate classes, so they're not necessarily – are they competitive with each other?
They're not competitive with each other yet, but they're very reliant on each other, so they do everything together. They've always have from, you know, 24/7, they're always together, and so it's great for them to be a bit separate so they can start to develop a little bit of independence and, like, that make their own decisions for themselves, not just what the other one's doing or you know, their own little games and probably their own little language they had for a while going. So, yeah, it's really good to kind of separate them and develop themselves a little bit without each other. But they can still play in the playground, so that's good.
They'll see plenty of each other and they can borrow each other's homework and all those little things that can go on in the background.
Yeah, for sure.
And you've had a pretty big 12 months because I think we'll probably work our way back through the story, but the last 12 months you actually stepped back from the role as CEO of Active Farmers. How would you describe what your day job is now and what you're up to?
Yeah, so that's been a massive change in my life. Active Farmers is kind of like my fourth child in a way. So at the moment I'm... I suppose it's almost a little bit like maternity leave in reverse. So it was a family decision because the kids were, it was about 6 months ago, I stepped back or a little bit longer just to spend more time with them. And then when they go to school, I just really wanted to be there for them and present for them. And also there was just an opportunity on our farming business, in our farming business at home, for me to step in and do some work on the farm. So I'm doing a couple of days on the farm, a bit out in the field, a bit in the office, And that's been a really, really positive thing to be more involved within the business. Been really enjoying that. I haven't worked on a farm for a very long time, so I'm sort of, I think my husband looks at me sometimes and shakes me. Like, what are you doing? What are you doing that for? So, yeah, so that's kind of what, and I'm still on the board of Active Farmers, and I'm still taking my classes at Mangapla, like the same classes as I did from day one. So that's still going. So, yeah, I'm still quite involved with Active Farmers, but not so much in the, you know, day-to-day grind, but more from a strategic level. And, yeah, just loving working on the farm and just being home a bit more and just being there for the family a bit more than I probably was. Yeah, so it's good, yeah.
I had a previous guest, and I often put it to our guests to say, well, what's a question of something they're wondering that we can ask someone else? But a previous guest asked, what's something that you do outside your day job which benefits you inside it? And by the sounds of it, you wear lots of different hats. So is there something you do outside that benefits kind of those respective jobs, or do they complement each other?
So for me, and I suppose this is kind of why Active Farmers started in the first place, like I love health, and I used to love team sport, and just keeping fit. So outside of work, I probably have too many hobbies. I've had to kind of narrow them a little bit, but like I just love the feeling of keeping fit. So I like my running. I've always been into my horses, so I've got a horse and my daughter has a horse, and then just love snow skiing. So I've just tried to, like, I've had to narrow them down to those three sports. So yeah, I just think that, you know, if you can look after you and your health and be as healthy as you can with what constraints you may have around you, it just makes life easier, not only for you feeling better and having more energy and having a clearer mind, like better mental health, but then it also makes life better for everyone around you as well. So I'm probably super cranky if I don't, you know, if I'm not moving enough or I'm not getting any time just for me on my own, I'm probably I will be just more irritable. So yeah, for me, like having just that sport element in my life is really important. And then the sense of having a connection to community, so still taking my Active Farmers classes, like I'm taking those classes for the community, but I also love that connection that I get to see the community members each week as well. So yeah, definitely health is a big part of my life, because outside of my work, because I just know how much it benefits me and everyone around me, and decisions we make and how that affects the business or whatever job I'm doing. It's quite massive for me.
And that little town of Mangapla, tell me a little bit about it and some of the people that you get through that Active Farmers group.
Yeah, so Mangapla is half an hour south of Wagga, and there's about 100 people that live in the community and surrounding community. And so at the moment, it's sort of like I've got some of the people who came from the first class ever, which was March 2014. So it's been nearly 9 years actually since I've been taking classes there. So I've still got some of the same original Active Farmers, which is awesome. And then over the years, there's been people that have come and gone with, you know, through having children or sort of more winding down their exercise or what have you. But at the moment, like I've got a real mix of some young farmers, which is awesome, some older farmers. Then I've got community members that are not farmers, women like my parents-in-law who Vicky's turning 70 this year and Mike's already 70, so some older people. So a real mixed bag, like someone who's just had a stroke and recovering from that. So a real mixed bag. And I think the beauty of the way that the Active Farmers classes are designed is that it's all time-based. So rather than saying, all right, everyone, we're going to go and run 10 laps of the oval, it's just not going to work. So it'll be, okay, in 5 minutes, see how much of this you can do, so everyone can go at their own pace, which is awesome. And it's really nice to kind of have such a diverse mixture of people that come to class, because you wouldn't normally see those people around. Life gets busy and what have you, and so that's also really nice to have that community connection with people you wouldn't necessarily see or know.
And so a really silly question, how do you make it work? It's obviously of a night time or a morning or something?
Yeah, so for our community, I take Wednesday nights at 6:30 and Friday mornings at 6 a.m. So people can come before or after work. When I was on maternity leave, I did do a little mums and bubs type class for a while there when a few of us were having babies, and that was quite nice as well. But yeah, generally the before and after work is how you make it work. Definitely I struggle more to get people to get up at 6 o'clock. There's more people in the afternoon. So I think, why? It's so good to just get up and get it done, and you're up and going early and your day just flows and you start your weekend. But anyway, it's always a hard one.
Different people. That, especially in winter, I can imagine it's pretty hard to drag yourself out of bed in that little pocket just south of Wagga.
Yes. Yes, it is hard.
But it's probably nowhere near as cold as where you actually grew up. So in Tassie, were you on a farm?
I grew up, you have Launceston, and then you go up the river about half an hour, and then you come to a place called Rowella on the Tama River. So I spent a lot of my childhood there, not all of my childhood. So I grew up on a farm there, and we had just a mixed farm. And I was just really fortunate because I had two sets of cousins, within, one of them was in walking distance. The other one were just a 2-minute drive, and the other cousins were only, 20 minutes away. So we had, some other families in the area. So we had a really nice community, mostly made up of family, but it was a very, very special upbringing. Had a lot of influence from my grandparents, lived on the farm as well. And I saw a lot of my parents. So I had a very, very fortunate upbringing. Down in Tassie. So yeah, spent a fair bit of my, probably till I was about 12 or something, lived there. And then mum and dad leased the farm, and we lived about halfway between the farm and Launceston for the second half of my childhood. So yeah, very, very fortunate.
And because I read that you went and became a Jillaroo up in the Territory. Was that like, how did that come about? Was that just a dream to get somewhere a whole lot warmer and as far away from Tasmania as you could?
Yeah, well, I do actually have Raynaud's disease, and the doctor told me to move somewhere warmer. I'm like, oh, that's helpful when you're 16 and living in Tassie. Anyway, no, I always had a horse. So I loved my horses, and I used to embarrassingly read like every single Jillaroo book under the sun, all of Rachel Treasure's books. And I remember finishing school, and dad said to me, why don't you go and be Jillaroo? And I said, I couldn't do that. And he said, well, yes, you could. So we got in touch with Anna Brown Recruitment, and then I got a job within a week on a property just south of Northern Territory. Just 10 minutes west of Katherine in the Northern Territory, with CPC at the time. And yeah, I absolutely loved it. I really, really enjoyed it. It's a fantastic thing to do.
Were you tempted to stay there for longer, or did the lure of university and kind of getting on with life come through too strongly?
Yeah, absolutely. I've really thought about staying there for longer, but I did ag science at Melbourne Uni, and the course I was doing, its last intake was happening the next year. So it was the way the course was structured was changing. So I really wanted to do that particular course, so I did have to come home, because you can kind of get stuck in a bit of a bubble up there, and it is just it's like living in a different world, and you don't sort of see much outside of what's going on outside of where you are. So it's pretty easy to kind of and it also depends on what crew you land. I had a really fantastic group of people that were working there, so that made it a lot a lot more enjoyable, I think, than some people can experience up there. Yeah.
And like, were you shipped off there solo? And I think, like, what were your first impressions when you actually arrived up there near Katherine?
So I'd barely been out of Tasmania. I got a flight to, didn't understand the concept of changing time zones, and I thought I'd miss my plane because I was, you know, I hadn't changed my watch or whatever. And went to Darwin and then got a bus to Katherine, and I just remember it was just so unbelievably hot because it was just the end of the wet season. It was just such an eye-opener for me, but I just was so lucky that the people that I was working with were really welcoming and really nice. And then we had a 2-week camp with all the other jewelleries and jackaroos in Katherine, so that was great to meet them. And I think the best part of it was, for me, was like, we got allocated 4 horses, and I just thought, oh, this is awesome. Yeah. I got 4 horses, and you know, we were riding every day, and I really, so that part I really enjoyed, and it was just such an eye-opener. It was awesome.
What was the most challenging aspect of it all?
Just, you know, long days in the saddle, and I just remember being so incredibly thirsty, and you just have to go all day. And so it does definitely build up a lot of resilience. I think just really, it does challenge you, it does push you, but it just makes you realize that, you know, you can actually do more than you think that you can. And just helps kind of break down some of those barriers around confidence and all those sorts of things.
We recently did a little collab where one of the station cooks, she actually works for Consolidated Parcel Company, shared what a day in the life was. And when I saw the breakfast, I just couldn't get over it. It was like steak, spaghetti, and something else. And I was like, that is honestly just the breakfast of champions.
Bacon, eggs. I think I ate cornflakes for breakfast for a year. And I remember my parents came up to stay, and we got back from a camp, and someone said, oh, Ginny, the whole of Tasmania's here. That was a little bit embarrassed because there were sort of five couples, and they'd all set their tents up on the lawn, and they were all there waiting. And I was like, oh, God. So then they came out and to see one of the musters, and they also all just absolutely loved it as well. That was quite special to have them to come stay.
I bet. And that shell sinking moment probably passed on, and now it's just a good memory. In big news from us, we're excited to welcome Rabobank as a partner of Humans of Agriculture. So, who have we got from Rabo this week?
G'day. My name's Angus Gidley-Baird. I'm the Senior Animal Proteins Analyst with Rabobank Australia. Just like our great friends at Humans of Agriculture, we also have a podcast channel. And this month, I've caught up with my colleague, Lance Zimmerman from the US, to understand what's going on in that US cattle market. The US is very important for Australia. It regained its position as our largest beef export market last year. And what happens over the next 12 to 24 months over there is going to have a key influence on the Australian cattle market. Tune in to listen. Search for Rabo Research Australia on your favourite podcast platform and keep up with the latest agri trends. See you at Beef.
And then, like, I'm really fascinated by the active farmer story and how it actually came about. But I think probably what might help people who haven't actually come across active farmers, can you run us back to what you were doing at the time when you came up with the idea, and what was it that you were actually trying to create?
Yeah, sure. So at the time, it was 2013, and I was working. I didn't ever think I'd do banking, but I was working in agribusiness banking up at Wagga, and that's how I met my husband, because I got moved up this way, and then I'd moved out to the farm at Mango, and I didn't really know anyone, and I suppose growing up in a little community, I was kind of thinking, well, you do need people in the community to play some kind of role, like do their bit to keep things going. So I was thinking, like, how am I going to do my bit? How am I going to get to know people? And then at the same time, I was kind of thinking a lot was on my mind about mental health of farmers and farming communities, high risk of suicide. And, you know, like, I just absolutely loved everything about growing up on a farm, and was so happy to be living in country again. And, you know, it's the best place to live in the world, right? Like, why? And everyone that lives in the bush, like, they love it. They live and breathe it. They choose to live there. But with that choice to live in the bush, has these conditions that are, you know, that are challenges that are outside of your control. So, you know, floods, fires, droughts, financial stress, succession planning, commodity price risk. You have isolation, like we're herd animals, are not meant to be alone a lot. There's a lot of farmers that are alone a lot. Some farmers, and not all farmers, but some, I get myself into trouble, and not as active as they used to be. A lot of them have bad backs. Like 9 out of 10 farmers, you ask, what, you know, they have a bad back, in which they're in pain. And then, you know, they're pretty stoic, tough people. I think stigma's definitely being broken down around mental health and reaching out. But, you know, there's not a lot of services in many areas. So if someone has recognized, I'm not doing very well, like there's a massive barrier there to actually get help then. So, you know, there's a lot. So then when you think of all those challenges, like it's kind of like a perfect storm when you look at, break them all down and look at it from that perspective. And a lot of things that are just outside of your control. There's nothing you can do about a lot of these challenges. And then I started thinking about the influence that team sports had on my life. And at the time, I like it, keep fit, feel good, see my friends. Like, that's about all I thought of it. When you kind of look a little bit deeper, like delve into that team sport effect, is like, You're not only exercising, great for physical and mental health, but you're with a team and you see your teammates every day. So you have that connection to others and a sense of belonging, which is a basic human being need. And so if someone doesn't turn up to training, they're going to get a call like, where were you today? Is everything all right? If someone is just, their behavior changes, the team are going to notice. Whereas if you don't see people regularly, you're just not in the, you know, you're not in as good a position to notice if behavior is changing, or because, you know, you bump into people at the corner store, it's pretty easy to put on a brave face if something's not going very well, or if someone's not traveling very well. So that's kind of what I refer to as like the team sport effect. And I thought, by trying to mimic that, I could start active farmers at Mangaflower. Like, yes, we're not going to have the competition of the game or whatever, but we're going to bring everyone in as though they're going to footy training or netball training. Because sometimes, like, once people hang up those footy boots or stop playing netball, like, that's it for exercise ever. Like, done. And so, you know, then they're just catching up at the pub. So it's kind of like, oh, I'm going to try and get them to get off the farm, out of the house, couple of times a week, catch up regularly, get their heart rates up, and just go home feeling stronger both physically and mentally without even really realizing or thinking about it. It's just kind of happening in the background. So that's kind of how the light bulb moment, I suppose, for active farmers came about. And I got my PT ticket while I was working at Rabo on the weekends. I'd be studying away, and then I just started that in 2014, just for Mangaflower. Like, I didn't think it would go anywhere else. It was, like, just for my community. So, that's kind of how it started. And I suppose that then the Euron Quinty, they reached out a few months later. So I was going over there, and then I was kind of maxed out. And then fast forward probably 18 months was when I actually left my job to work on active farmers full time, because there just had been a lot of interest and just kind of wanted to see where it could go. And I think I probably always knew that while I was very lucky to have my job, I just probably knew it wasn't really for me. You know, deep down, I sort of thought it was probably something else I could do. And then, so I formed a partnership with Delta Ag. So then it was no longer just me. Then I was working with Delta Ag and then this massive network of people. And that's kind of how it all started.
We've got a bit to unpack there, but I'd love to step back. That piece of actually deciding to leave the bank and make the decision, were you running on a whim, or what was running through your head in terms of pursuing this, and what kind of position, I guess, were you in? What were the things that you'd weighed up to actually then go, you know what, I'm going to chase this?
Yeah, so, well, I had a different business show interest in sponsoring the program, and that didn't eventuate. And then I had a friend, Beck Milliken, who was working, she's on maternity leave now, still at Delta, but working in HR, and she said, I really think Delta will sponsor this. So I got a video made and sent it to them, and then had a meeting with Jared Hines, the managing director there. And then within 2 weeks, he said, here's 40 grand. We want to partner with you. We'd love to see if we can expand Active Farmers. So that gave me enough confidence to go, okay, I have to just explore this avenue. It was really risky. And then do you know what happened? I resigned, and 2 weeks later I found out I was having twins. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is not good. I remember telling Beck and Jared, like, I'm so sorry, I'm having twins. Like, I didn't know. And so, you know, there goes all that security around your job and your maternity leave and everything like that. And so that never really driven me, I suppose. But they were so supportive in that, like, hey, let's just manage it. You know, what do you want to do? And I said, I think I want to just keep going. And so they were so incredibly supportive. And so we just soldiered on, I suppose. So I think, like, just having that partnership with Delta did give me enough confidence, or, you know, to just take that leap. And it wasn't easy. It was risky. I think some of my family were like, are you sure you really want to do this? And yeah, so I just had like a kind of a gut feeling that, no, this is what I need to do. And definitely no regrets.
It's a pretty powerful thing. I was going to ask my next question, which one part might have been to find out that you were going to have twins, but what's something you know now that would have been really helpful for you to know when you're making that leap?
I think just, you know, you kind of, in conversations with people, you do develop a bit of a sense of, oh, I'm getting just really positive vibes around this idea. But then you're never really sure whether people are just being nice to you, going, giving you that false sense of, oh, yeah, great idea, love it, yep, go on, you should try it. And then but in their minds they're like, oh, I don't know about that, but I'll just be nice because she seems really keen to to explore that avenue, which literally does happen. And so,
oh god, I can I'm with you on that one.
You would relate to that.
Oh, tell me what you don't like about it. I feel it would have been handier rather than just saying it's a great idea.
Yeah. But I think just really, you know, just trusting that, you know, you've got to trust your gut feel, I think, as well. But you do, having some kind of evidence that there's a potential that it can work, you do kind of need that as well. But I think probably the biggest mistake I made was, originally I wanted to start Active Farmers out of a charity. And then I had some advice, like, don't do a charity. You've got to report to a board. You've got to do all this reporting, like, just be a company and don't do that. So it started out as a company, and within about 6 months or less than that, 4 months, I was like, this is not the right model for Active Farmers, because it's not about the money. It's about impact. And, you know, we're on purpose targeting little communities who have no services and hardly any people, because the towns are already serviced, like the bigger inland cities are already serviced, so no point going there. We want to bring something to the community, And that's not necessarily a commercially viable business model in all communities, because some communities, you know, they have 50 people, but they matter. And so then it was about 6 months later, I did suggest to Delta, hey, could we just convert to a charity? Because I think people, you know, had different businesses approach me about sponsorship, but then when they found out it was a company, oh, no, we can't sponsor you because it'll end up in your back pocket. That was a lot of, so I kind of took another leap of faith and went, I think there's so much interest for this program. I think we need to turn into a charity. And that was a really, really good move, because it was probably through that or die. And again, I think some people thought, you know, you've tried, it didn't work. Why, you know, maybe just go back to the bank or whatever. But no, I just had this sort of gut feel that this is the right model for us. And so I think we had our first board meeting the night before I had an emergency seizure, and I wasn't present on that one. So it all kind of was all happening at the same time, these twins and Active Farmers. But I just had, you know, so much support and amazing people that were all pitching in by then. So, yeah, so that was like, you know, that would have been useful to know in the beginning that it was the right model for Active Farmers. But, you know, you live and you learn.
Absolutely, you do. Did you get close to throwing in the towel at all and going, like, just exercising that fallback option of, oh, well, I can just go back to the bank or whatever it might have been?
No. But stupidly, I even look back now and think, what was I thinking? Like, it was just, I just never. And I just think that you got to be all in. You can't have those kind of doubts in your mind, because then it's all over. Mm. Like, you just have to be 100% in for it to work. So I just felt like the second that I started to go, maybe we should just forget it. That'd be the end of it.
Yeah.
So, no, I didn't. I just had, like, faith that it was going to work, which is, again, pretty stupid, but I just...
No, but it has.
I don't know.
And I actually think, well, on that, that's probably something that I really need to hear in the sense of, I think, like, how I'm thinking about Humans of Ag and everything at the moment is, it's invincibility is not the right word, but I feel like there's a real superpower in the confidence you get knowing that, like, the only thing to come out of all of this is going to be upside. So if it works, it's going to be awesome. If it doesn't work, well, there's still going to be all those learnings and things that I get out of it. But at this stage, there's no kind of reason to show why it's not working. And we're going all right.
Yeah, no, I talked to you about that a while ago. And I think, it's just amazing what happens when you just all in and you've got to believe in it.
Yeah, well, there's no fallback, is there?
No, because once you start not believing in it, then no one else is going to do it for you.
For sure. Yeah. As you're building a team, and this is an interesting thing, I'm asking this really from my lens as well of being super curious about this, but what were the characteristics that you were looking for people, and how did you actually bring them into this vision, which was Ginny's vision of Active Farmers, but then actually, I guess, finding the right people in the right seats to make all that happen?
Yeah, so, well, the first part of the team was forming the board. And so I had Jared Hines and Beck Milliken, or she's now Rogers, from Delta. And then it might sound a little bit strange, but I actually asked my dad to chair the board. And then
I'd love to know why that is.
Well, he's very, very good at business, and he's just good at kind of making things happen and helping make hard decisions. And I guess I've always just really valued his input and his advice. But sometimes, you know, when you are making tricky decisions, it is just great to have someone that's like, boom, this is what we're doing, and move on. And that was great in those early stages to get established. He's let him go now as chair. He's off the hook now. But yeah, it was just really, yeah, he just has always been, you know, he's always loved coaching, and he's always, you know, I've just always really valued what he has to say and his input and support. He's always really helped me with also with my belief in what we're doing as well. So remember I said to him, Dad, you know, what would you think about being the chair? And he said, I'd absolutely love to. And that was great. And then we had a, you know, I needed a solicitor, we needed someone in comms, we needed accountant, like we needed a mix of people. So that was how he sort of formed the board. And then, so then we sort of traveled along a bit like that. And I remember it was a couple, maybe a year later, and we were on a holiday at Noosa, and I was with mum and dad were there, and I just was working a lot, and they were like, you need some help. Like you really, so then we had a lady in Tassie who started working. She had finished up in her job and was looking for a different job, and it just really matched well. And that was awesome because she had fantastic skills in administration, in putting documents together, and that just freed up my time to go out and be doing what I needed to do, whereas not being bogged down doing invoices and trying to work zero and, you know, the jack of all trades. I have no idea how to do zero or any of that stuff. So having her come along was just awesome. So from that point, we had another massive surge in growth, and so that was an absolute turning point. And then, yeah, from that point onwards, like we just kept growing and growing, and then so we'd sort of outgrow what we could do, and then we would need to put someone else on, and that process is still happening today. So, but I just always sort of would think these people just seem to descend from the heavens and arrive, and I just like pinch myself thinking, like, how on earth did we find all these people that are just so willing to pitch in and help? So there's like today there's 61 communities that Active Farmers is operating in. So there's 42 or 3 or maybe 4 Active Farmers trainers, and then there's 3 trainer managers who manage those trainers. There's our CEO, Justin, and our office manager. And then we've started doing a whole bunch of events. So we have Sammy in Sydney who's helping with events. And so, and then our board has changed over the years. We've had new people join. And it just blows my mind where these people come from and just arrive at exactly at the right time and just you know, it's amazing just what you can achieve when you have like-minded people who are all kind of rallying around like a common purpose and vision and goal, and how powerful that can be, and how people are just drawn to that. It just always amazes me. So we had like one board member sort of got out of my head a bit of a mess of how I was communicating what Active Farmers was, and like drilled it into a vision of building stronger and more resilient farming communities. And then now that's, everyone knows that. Been just so fortunate with the team, because that our Active Farmers is just built on people. It's not bricks and water. It's people. So we're very, very lucky.
And it's amazing when you're on a good thing like that, how the mess that could be created actually just sorts itself out. Like something always gives way, and the pieces of the puzzle just slot in, don't they?
Yep. And then it's just been a really beautiful thing. Like the agri corporates who have corporate social responsibility can see the benefit of an Active Farmers program being delivered to their customer base, who are then being provided the opportunity to have like a proactive approach to their health. And so we've just formed these really close relationships with heaps of different agribusinesses, which has also been absolutely crucial to our growth.
It takes the little communities and then the much bigger one as well to keep the wheels turning.
Yeah, definitely.
So something I have been wondering. So last year you mentioned that you had stepped back as CEO and you'd been building this baby for quite a number of years. What were the drivers behind the decision, which I think you touched on at the beginning, but what was it actually like to kind of go, you know what, everything that I've built up until this point, I'm happy to trust with someone else. And what was that like for you?
Yeah, I had my third baby, Will, and so the twins were 2.5 when he arrived. And then I had some maternity leave and I came back. And I went on, and I was loving it, coming back. And I went on a McKinsey leadership course. And just, it was like a 2-week intensive course. And I just, I don't think this is the intention of the course, but after I went on that course, I thought, there's just so much opportunity and there's for active farmers and me as a leader, like there's so much room for me to grow and improve. But I'm maxed out. I actually can't squeeze any more out of what I have to give. And like, you know, I've given my whole heart and soul into active farmers. And it probably took me about 6 months to actually say that out loud. It's like, I don't think I can do this anymore because it needs to keep going. It needs to keep benefiting more people. And it needs to keep growing and the demand is there. But I can't give any more and go with that. And so it was a really hard decision. And I thought, you know, it's probably me being selfish and trying to hang on to it is probably going to prevent it from going where it needs to go. And so that was a really hard thing to deal with. And I just felt like it was starting to affect my family too much and I was just totally consumed with it every day. It wasn't meant to be working every day, but, you know, I just was consumed by it all the time. And so it took me about 6 months to say it out loud, and then it took me probably another 3 months to tell the board. It was a long, drawn-out process, but I was just so terrified of people being really disappointed in me for giving up on it. And what I got was a total reverse of that. And people were just really supportive of the decision that I was making. And that really surprised me because I thought people would think, oh, so what, you're just going to build this up to this and then just leave it? And no one looked at it that way. I think people looked at it as though that's a really hard decision to make and you're putting your family first. So everyone's got that. That's, you know, that, you know, your family are number one. Like well, for me anyway, they're number one and they probably weren't being treated as number one. And, you know, not just my husband, who's been amazing through the whole journey. He's been so supportive, but it did put a lot of pressure on my parents and my parents-in-law as well. I had to go away a fair bit. So I just kind of felt that it was the right thing to do. So that was sort of mid-year last year that it was about May, I think, mid-May that made the change. So, yeah. It's quite a big thing in my life to change.
Yeah. It's huge. And I think there's probably lots of people, though, that are in awe of that ability to go, you know what, actually, this is where I'm at with this thing, but actually there's something more important. And I guess having the guts to actually make that call, there's probably lots of people who are going, wow, I wish I was that courageous with what I do, but I'll stick it in the hamster wheel of just running round and round and round. So.
Yeah, and I think... just taking that step back and going, it's not about me anymore. Like, yes, I started it, but it's so much bigger than just me. I'm not that big a deal. So it's going to be fine without me there. And I'm going to be on the board. I'm going to be around if people want to talk to me. I'm still probably follow it a bit too creepily with what's happening. Like, I know, you know, I really keep a really engaged eye over it. So it's not as though I've dropped off the face of the earth and just totally walked away from it. So I think that kind of helped in the decision making, that that I'd still have lots of involvement, but just not, you know, the daily grind, I suppose. It was definitely not an easy thing to do, but I think it's been the right decision looking back.
Definitely. Well, it sounds like you're very content with where it's at. And so what is next for you and for Active Farmers? What does the next few years and things look like? What are the goals and aspirations?
So Active Farmers is in 61 communities now. We have got 20 in the pipeline to start this year.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's a lot of communities. So, you know, that's a big priority for us is facilitating that. And that means fundraising. So that's a big focus for us at the moment is to have just such a big – it's always kind of been a bit of a gentle kind of increase, but to have it sort of go boom like that does require so that's a big focus for us at the moment is fundraising for that, because that needs to happen and it's that part of our strategic plan. And we have got lots of events as well that we do, like fun runs, Active Farmers games, charity bike rides. They're all on our website, the ones that are coming up in the next few months. So, you know, continuing that, because then the community driven events gives people something to train for and do, and, you know, meet other active farmers and things like that. So growth is kind of where that's where we're at without and being sustainable at the same time. It's hard to get that balance. And on the farm at home, in my new job as a Jillaroo one, working for my husband, we have just expanded the business significantly. So so I'm really enjoying working in that, a bit out on the field, a bit in the office, supporting my husband and contributing to the business is really, I'm loving it. And, you know, I actually have always wanted to be a farmer since I was, grew up on a farm, so that's kind of a bit of a dream come true for me. And just spending a lot more time being a mum, and as I said earlier, sort of maternity leave in reverse for me. So so that's sort of what will be happening in the future. Yeah,
sounds like the perfect little mix of things you've got for the next little while to keep you occupied.
Yeah, that's good. I'm very lucky.
One final question I'm keen to ask you, and it's one I ask everyone on the podcast, but if you get the chance to go and chat to your 10 students about the opportunities and why they should consider a career in agriculture, what would you say to them?
Yeah, I have heard you ask people this
once or twice.
When I was at school, I mean, times have changed a lot now, but I did want to be involved in the ag industry. So I always loved it. But I kind of felt like I should be doing something like teaching, or we weren't living on a farm anymore. So I didn't know if I was entitled to pursue that kind of career, that, you know, if I put my hand up and say I want to work in ag, that people would question, like, well, what do you want to do that for? You don't, you know, you shouldn't be doing that. So I think if I was talking to year 10 students, just giving them the confidence that it doesn't matter what your background is, and it doesn't matter what your parents have done or what your friends are doing or what you think people think you should do. If you have interest in being outside, in nature, in animals, in food, in marketing, or anything like that, there's a place for you in the ag industry, because it's just such a big industry now. I mean, it's producing food, so that's awesome to be involved in that. And so there's a place for almost every type of career within that. But just knowing that you don't need to have a sense of entitlement to go down that path. If you have no idea what ag is, it doesn't matter, because there'll be a place for you. I think sometimes that you know, well, that's just sort of from my experience, but hopefully it's not, you know, people are a bit open, more open-minded now about going down that path. Yeah, I think that's what I would say.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more in terms of all the different opportunities and pathways and different backgrounds, and like there's no linear path into agriculture like now. You can come in from anywhere and you can go anywhere kind of within it, and who knows what that looks like in the next 10 years as well. It's just continuing to evolve as the importance of sustainable food is demanded.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really exciting. And I just kind of think that, you know, sometimes I was listening to that, your episode with Warren, the Unbreakable Farmer, you know, he was talking about leaving school and going into ag and didn't want people to think, oh, you know, I dropped out of school, so I had to go into ag. Like, I think sometimes perception is that you don't have to be very smart or, you know, the old battler farmer. But there's some seriously savvy, and you know better than anyone, like seriously savvy business people out there who run the most amazing businesses and have to make incredibly difficult decisions. And, you know, you need a lot of brain power to be doing that. And it's exciting, and it, you know, it's not daggy. It's a really exciting industry, and I think sometimes it's not, the right light is not shown on those businesses. It's a lot of the time it is how much they're struggling, not celebrating how well some of them are doing. So it's a really, really exciting industry to be in.
Absolutely. Well, and I'm excited for you as you take this next step alongside your husband with the growing business and the growing family and everything else that comes with that. But thank you so much for coming and spending a bit of time with us on a sunny Sunday afternoon.
No worries. Thanks so much for having me, Ollie. Anytime.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. I think what I was really keen to chat with Ginny about and have her reflect on was that self-confidence that came with pursuing her own project and just the learnings that came from active farmers. And I think as she talked about the importance of building a board and the team around her, it's definitely something which has got me thinking about what are our next steps and where are we heading in the future, and who are the people we're really going to need to support us and in what kind of capacity and roles. If you haven't checked out our other podcast, In the Know on the Go, it's a quick, short, sharp 15-ish minutes designed to get people across the things that matter in Aussie agribusiness. If you haven't checked it out, follow the link in the show notes. Look after yourselves, stay safe, stay sane. And also a quick note that on the 15th of Feb, we'll actually be running our own yoga class. So if you're keen to get around that, sign up.